This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, on a visit to Japan last month, Joe Biden held a press conference at which he was asked, perhaps in the context of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, if the United States was prepared to intervene militarily if China ever made a move to attack Taiwan. And Biden's response was, yes, that's what we are committed to doing. It caused some considerable surprise because there is no formal agreement that the U.S. would intervene. The same day, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said if the U.S. continues to go down the wrong path, the U.S. will have to pay an unbearable price. And later that day, the Chinese and Russians flew a joint nuclear bomber exercise quite close to Japan. So tension arose as a result of something Biden said. A tension, of course, that has always been there because China feels very strongly that Taiwan is their part of their nation. We're joined now from Taiwan by William Yang, a journalist and a very valued contributor by The Stand. William, let me ask you first about Biden's response to that question. How surprised were you and how surprised were others in Taiwan?
I think it didn't really actually come as a huge surprise because this is actually not the first time that he has made a similar statement like that before. I think earlier this year during a town hall with CNN back in the US,
yes,
he was asked a similar question and his answer has actually been pretty consistent coming from him personally, on the issue of the hypothesis that when China militarily attacks Taiwan, whether the US will come to defend Taiwan or not, and he has consistently said yes. So I think it actually rather came as a reassurance in a way, because a sitting U.S. president has not actually made such a comment in, I think, repeatedly in public and on the record I think he is actually the first one. So a lot of the analysis were focusing on whether this is actually a sign that the U.S. is actually ready to officially pivot away from its traditional policy on Taiwan when it comes to the issue of involving a potential attack from China. But then, you know, I think soon after that, there were a string of walkback by top U.S. officials. First is Anthony Blinken during his big China policy speech, and then by Lloyd Austin just this past weekend in Singapore at the Shangri-La Dialogue, which is one of the most important, defense meeting around the world. So I think with all these signals being combined together, most of the experts agree that the U.S. has not actually changed its policy on Taiwan, but there is definitely a lot more, clarity when it comes to where the United States stands when it comes to assisting Taiwan to build up its defense and also in the threat coming from China.
Yes, and I mean, of course, it all depends on who is president of the United States. Were China to ever make that move, and the possibility that Donald Trump may return in 2024 as president would change the game considerably. To what extent has the Russian offensive in Ukraine, and indeed the nature of it, the barbaric nature of it, changed minds of the Taiwanese people, and indeed may well have changed attitudes in China as well?
I think what has really led to, you know, a major shift in the mentality here in Taiwan among the people is actually the ability of Ukrainians to put up a fight on their own.
Yes.
Without any outside support, because we all know that all countries, even neighboring countries, have made it really clear that they are not going to get militarily involved, but what they are willing to do is to continue to supply Ukrainians with very advanced weapons and the, you know, to. But so I think that has actually already reflected in the rising number of Taiwanese people actually receiving some sort of combat training over here. You know, get, whether it is ammunition usage, or like whether it is the government's policy of adjusting its training for the reserve military, and also the talk and discussion about lengthening the length of the military service over here in Taiwan. So these are actually, I think, rather than, you know, the attack coming from Russia, the response from Ukraine is more important in playing a more, I think, decisive role over here in changing people's mindset about Taiwan's self-defense ability.
The Chinese, in launching, for example, an exercise where a nuclear bomber in a joint military effort with Russia goes on maneuvers close to Japan. The fact that just 2 weeks before Russia invaded Ukraine, he was in Beijing at the Olympic ceremony and appeared close to President Xi. The feeling many people got was that both China and Russia have sensed in the West that it is weak, that there are divisions, and in the case of the United States, for example, that the Trump presidency and the way it ended would encourage China and Russia to be bold, to do something that really would have been unthinkable 5 years ago.
Right. Indeed. I think that is definitely the consensus. But I think the encouraging sign over the last 2 months over here in Indo-Pacific is the surprising, I think, change of attitude.
Yes.
In Japan, because Japan traditionally is very reluctant to including, you know, increasing its own defense capacity or defense budget, or even, you know, like getting itself involved in any kind of potential regional military conflict. But I think over the last 2 months, we have seen very clear signs from the Japanese government and from different, you know, from the prime minister to the defense minister and to other key ministries inside Japan that the security of Taiwan is the utmost concern to Japan's security and defense right now, actually. There are new reports and information suggesting that Japan is ready to send defense officials actually be stationed in Taiwan. That is going to be a very big change in its policy. And then there's, of course, also a lot of different kinds of alliances that Japan is inserting itself into, and also making
yes.
very strong public statements. So I think the fact that the U.S. is actually able to nudge Japan and get Japan be more actively involved in regional security issues is a sign that the potential growing aggression and also the potential alliance between China and Russia is really raising the concern among the Japanese, because they are going to be one of the on the front line, one of the countries on the front line, yes, that is going to face a potential alliance like that. And they have, you know, in recent years, rising tensions with both China and Russia. There are disputed territories between Japan and those two countries. And so it will definitely, it is, I think, expected, but also an encouraging change in transition and shift that we have seen coming from Japan.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, William, in the Chinese mind, the takeover of Hong Kong, the way they did it, the fact that Britain, with whom they had an agreement, did nothing, and now Hong Kong has really changed dramatically with no British or Western response. Would that, in your view, encourage China?
I think it will definitely enhance Beijing's confidence. But also, I think Beijing already kind of, predict that there is not going to be much very real actual, you know, actions coming, yes, from Western countries to, I think, condemn or even punish China for anything that it tries to do in Hong Kong, because I think jurisdiction-wise, Hong Kong is a, yes, part of China. And so even if China is violating its promise in the Sino-British Joint Declaration for, I think, accelerating the pace of removing the autonomy that was promised to Hong Kong, but I think at the end of the day, all that international community, including the UK, can do is to condemn it by word and maybe impose some form of sanctions on officials that are responsible for facilitating that process. But in reality, I think China knows that there is not much that these Western countries can do. And so it is being emboldened by, and then it is really accelerating the pace of, I think, you know, in the aligning Hong Kong with Beijing more and more in reality. And so I think China is definitely going to further feel confident and also comfortable in asserting its aggression in, yes, issues that it views as domestic. But I think when it comes to the issue regarding Taiwan, it knows very well that jurisdiction-wise and internationally, there is some ambiguity and also controversy around whether China does have the legitimacy to claim Taiwan as its own. And so I think that is going to postpone or even make Beijing think twice before it takes any actual action in maybe launching more aggressive move towards Taiwan.
Yes, because it has been active in the sea that divides Taiwan from China. It has The military maneuvers have been more and more invasive of Taiwanese territory. And am I right in thinking that Taiwan is a much bigger deal for China than Hong Kong was?
Yeah, for sure, because of the fact that internationally, most Western democracies would not just automatically agree and announce that, yes, Taiwan is part of China. The ambiguity in the so-called China policy in most of these Western countries is that they acknowledge that there is only one official and legitimate government that's representing the country called China. But at the same time, they do not, that policy does not extend to the point where they agree that, yes, Taiwan is a part of China. That particular yes. line normally never exists in the One China policy in most of the Western democracies, and Beijing knows very well about that. And so if it finds a way to either annex Taiwan at some point in the near future or in the long term through non-military ways, that is going to be viewed as a huge boost of success and legitimacy domestically for the Chinese Communist Party. But it knows very well that the current trend and the current mood over here inside in Taiwan domestically is actually going completely in the complete opposite direction.
Yes.
From what they would have hoped for, which is why I think Beijing has reflected their frustration through these growing military aggression and military threat. But you would always see that Beijing would draw a line for itself when it comes to these coercive maneuvering around Taiwan, because they know very well that once they cross that red line considered by most of the Western democracies, then there will be sterner or more unpredictable responses or more, I think, a sympathy given to Taiwan. So that's yes. not what Beijing wants.
Now, Phil Davidson was the admiral commanding the U.S. forces in the Indo-Pacific region until last year. And he gave a speech recently in which he suggested that the year 2027 might be an important year because it's the centenary of the formation of the People's Liberation Army. He also pointed to the fact that President Xi will be seeking to be returned to leadership this year. And he felt that 2027 was a date we should watch out for. Of course, it's a little while away. But is there pressure on Xi within the Chinese Communist Party to do something, quote unquote, about Taiwan?
I think that is a very interesting dynamic. A lot of whether Xi Jinping feels the pressure to prove his legitimacy to remain in power through the very complicated issue of Taiwan will have to depend on a lot of different factors domestically. I think the biggest factor is going to be about China's economic performance, because economy is actually all that most Chinese people care about.
Yes.
As long as there is continued economic growth, then people inside China is not going to start having frustrations about the government, and there will be less, I think, skepticism about the legitimacy of Xi Jinping to stay in power for longer than any other leader in the history of the Chinese Communist Party. But at the same time, I think Xi Jinping definitely knows very well the risks and the complexity that
Yes.
involved in, a potential attack that will be initiated by Beijing. So, which is why I think we have not really seen any real sign that China is ready to make the first strike, but rather it has, it is choosing to use the way of the so-called gray zone tactics to increase the pressure on Taiwan. And maybe when there is like a slip or like a miscalculation from either side, it could potentially be given as a legitimate reason for China to take further steps. But right now, I think China is waiting for that moment of miscalculation. And yes. That is also what most of the experts are afraid about, which is, you know, like, it's so hard to predict when that miscalculation is going to happen. And with the increased coercive actions coming from Beijing, that only enhances the likelihood of that miscalculation.
And can you explain the gray zone concept to me and our listeners?
So the gray zone tactic is typically being described by most security experts as China's way of flying its military planes into the air defense identification zone in Taiwan, that is considered by Taiwan. And usually what happens is that whenever there is a Chinese fighter jet flight that flew into the ADIZ of Taiwan, Taiwan will send its fighter jet to warn off those Chinese fighter jets. But with the frequency, the increased frequency of that tactic, basically, I think in 2020 and 2021, there were consecutive days or months where China sent these fighter jets every day into yes. Taiwan's ADIZ. And the frequency that Taiwan had to dispatch is military fighter jets into the air to actually just monitor, it's actually increasing the pressure on Taiwan's air force, and at the same time it's depriving Taiwan's air force from other very important trainings, because yes. it spends most of the energy on just dealing with these increased Chinese aggression. And what the experts are concerned about is the possibility of any sort of over the board yes. action coming from either side. So
yes.
If there is like a collision between the two sides of military fighter jets, then that could lead to a much larger warfare that is going to involve both sides, and that is very easily going to have a spillover effect to other regions, especially easily into Japan. So I think the gray zone tactic is what the experts consider as China's way to provoke the Taiwanese side to take any more, you know, riskier yes. actions.
Let me ask you, you mentioned the Chinese economy and its supreme importance. We read today about the COVID outbreak in Beijing. We've read about Shanghai, which is the largest city in China, and the problems with COVID there and locking people in their homes and so on. The COVID outbreak appears to have made the Chinese authorities very, very nervous indeed. It's a zero COVID policy. It's a highly risky policy in many ways. What's happened in Beijing, and how are they doing in their battle with COVID now?
So there has been a re-emergence of a larger infection trend in Beijing just over the last 2 days. Originally, Beijing actually relaxed some, you know, restrictions on dining in at restaurants, and also they lifted some restrictions imposed on college campuses because of the protests staged by college students. And so, but you know, with the re-emergence of the larger number of cases inside Beijing again, they are now targeting hotels and other facilities where people are likely to gather together, you know, for precaution. And in Shanghai, they are still requiring residents in both Shanghai and Beijing for the constant PCR test. And that is really creating some disruption to the functioning and operation of businesses, or even just people's daily life, because oftentimes their life is being dictated by the amount of time that they have to spend in lining up to get a COVID test, yes. To do certain things. And so that is having a huge impact on the Chinese economy. And a lot of the predictions are saying that it is going to be reflected on the Chinese economic performance data later, I think in the next few months. It has not been completely, I think in April, there was already a dip in the performance of the Chinese economy. And it is predicted that this so-called downward trend is going to continue until China is ready to, pivot away from the zero COVID strategy, simply because the zero tolerance for any local cases that has been practiced or adopted by all local governments inside China has really created challenges for businesses, both local and also foreign businesses. And there is also the fear that foreign business owners are going to start looking at options of emigrating their presence, decreasing their presence inside China and move it somewhere else in Asia. Like Vietnam has been mentioned a couple times by European businesses as a potential hub for their supply chain in Asia. So that is what I think in the long term, we have to see what's the scale of the, I think, exodus of these foreign businesses. And that's going to, have a reflection about how serious the challenge that the zero COVID strategy has put on the Chinese economy.
And the timing is not good for President Xi, because in the autumn he is hoping to keep his job, and if he does, he will be set to serve longer than Mao Zedong. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He is going to become the longest serving Chinese leader. And so, yeah, obviously, there have been in recent weeks talks about whether the outgoing premier, Li Keqiang, is actually using his, he has a economic background. So using his ability to take over more control in the domestic affairs when it comes to controlling the economic and policies inside China, and whether that is actually going to create some difficulty for Xi Jinping to have a very smooth transition or, I think, a path to seek his third term. So I think that is a lot of speculations are focusing on that right now, leading up to the Party Congress in the fall. And I think that is going to be very interesting, and a lot of eyes are focusing on that.
Yes, and the stakes are really high for everybody. How engaged are the Chinese people in this process, in the idea of President Xi making this historic transition and achieving something that even Mao Zedong did not, in terms of longevity?
So China's political structure and system prevents any actual participation from the Chinese people. So there's almost nothing that the Chinese people can actually do to influence this decision. It's all,
of course,
within,
yes,
the infighting and the of the Chinese Communist Party's different factions. And so it all depends on, the most powerful group of political actors inside the Chinese Communist Party to determine how or who they prefer to be the next leader, or whether they still think that it's the best idea for the party to keep Xi Jinping as its leader.
Okay, well, let's hope that everything is okay with you in Taiwan. A final question about the interest people have in Taiwan about the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
So, unfortunately, the general interest in the news about that is happening in Ukraine has dropped tremendously over the,
yes,
last few weeks. I think that is actually a sign across the world, even in,
yes,
Europe. I think a lot of the attentions have already been moved on to the recovering or the reopening, saying bye to COVID. And I think a lot less interest and attention has been put on that. I think especially that initial connection that Taiwanese people feel about, between,
yes,
Ukraine and Taiwan's fate has definitely waned over time. And now I think it's really going to be hard to draw the attention back unless there is like some very, very dramatic development.
Yes.
Coming out of Ukraine. Otherwise, Taiwanese people probably won't really pay too much attention to what is happening over there.
Okay, William, we're very grateful to you as always for joining us. That's William Yang in Taipei. And we're grateful to William, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.